Hey, good morning, happy weekend, happy Monday, right?
Whatever, it was a happy weekend,
yeah,
right?
It was a happy weekend. Okay. Happy Monday to everybody. I still have weekend on my mind. I wonder why. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our roundtable panel. We have the best and the brightest before us this morning, and we join...
Is that in a different studio, or...
That? No, some of us are the best and brightest.
Yes, you are.
And we welcome you to join us, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we have lots to talk about this morning. First, let me introduce the panel at large. Joining me for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok.
How do you do?
Newsman Ray Graff.
Pleased to meet you.
And University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Happy to be here.
It is a thrill to have you here. So let us go with what is happening in this world and some of the questions that and some issues that we've been talking about for a long time and things that continue to make news and to be one of those things that we just say, huh? There was a great article in the New York Times yesterday about how this shutdown has been really in the works for a long time and how ultimately there was a branch of the Republican Party that was looking to figure out a way, a plan to defund Obamacare, and this is one of the ways that they came up with it. They talk about Senator Ted Cruz speaking in August to Heritage Action gathering in Dallas and other issues that have been going around for a long time. I'm not sure that this is really surprising to anyone other than to the fact that this is one of those things where you get to see how the sausage is made a little bit.
Right. I would like to have seen this story a little bit earlier, I think. And it points out once again that this shutdown is really about Obamacare. And why is it so horrible a thing that we have to go to these lengths? Why have the Koch brothers, and boy, don't they make great movie villains, why are they putting this time and effort into it? It's not what Democrats want. Wouldn't most Democrats go with a universal one-payer system? Instead, this was a compromise developed by Republicans, used by a Republican governor in Massachusetts, and suddenly now it has become such a horrible thing that we're shutting down government.
Is one paragraph from the article. The current budget brinkmanship is just the latest development in a well-financed, broad-based assault on the health care law, Mr. Obama's signature legislative initiative. Groups like Tea Party Patriots, Americans for Prosperity, and Freedom Works are all immersed in the fight, as is Club for Growth, a business-backed nonprofit organization. Some like Generation Opportunity and Young Americans for Liberty, both aimed at young adults, are upstarts. Heritage Action is new too, founded in 2010 to advance the policy prescriptions of its sister group, the Heritage Foundation. So those are the groups.
Well, it does appear, because things move fast, that based on what Speaker Boehner was saying yesterday
on the Sunday shows,
yes, that they're already moving away from the health care,
right,
because they understand that's a loser. Now they're looking for something else desperately. See, I agree with Rosemary, but I think it's really destroy Obama rather than destroy Obamacare.
That's the main impetus.
Yeah. And I think that the name...
And again, I would say, why? Why is he such a horrible president that you could not endure, say, even 8 years with him? Why the focus?
Well, because that's what's happened to our polarized politics. I think the Boehner is the most interesting part of this thing. You know, I don't think he's a terribly bad man, but I think he's a weak man. And I think what's happened is that he has gotten himself into a situation here. He can't get out of it. You got 30 right-wingers out there who are pulling the strings. You've got a lot more who have to go out and face election themselves. Guys like Chris Gibson and Peter King and all these other guys who have to go out and run for office in competitive Democratic districts.
Right.
And so what's happening is Boehner is for, and I can't quite get it, except that I think when he turns around and looks over his shoulder, he sees Cantor and some of the others breathing down his back. And therefore, they have a chance of displacing him. I don't think he wants to be displaced. And what's more, I don't think the moderates in the party want him displaced, because inevitably it's going to be somebody worse than him who's running for office, but who runs for the speakership. But I think they're in. I think Boehner is in real trouble here.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that the weekend I did lots of reading. We may talk about this later. There is a struggle by journalists to cover this in a way that is balanced. Like, what can they be thinking? That's what you're going out to find. Right. And you think that there must be something logical and reasonable in what the Tea Party, what the ultra-conservatives are doing. And there are some people who say, no, it isn't. It's just evil and it should be stopped and it should be labeled that way by the press. I still want to understand what they're doing. I will tell you that I am really impressed with the way that the Tea Party has manipulated the system. They've not broken any rules. They have actually done tactics that have been used before, although never in this combination and in this way. And they have really played the game great. Mm. And I hate it because I don't like the side they're on. But I have to, in the same way that I think George Bush won the presidency. The Republicans played the game better than the Democrats did.
Well, I think there's something to that. I think if you add up all of the votes when you vote for presidency, Electoral College aside, everybody sort of gets a vote. So things like immigration reform and the women's vote and all the rest of it count. And Obama wins because they lose women. They lose. But when you come down to the way in which the House of Representatives is apportioned, it is malapportioned.
Right.
It's not good, because what happens is, you saw it happen in Texas. The legislature becomes Republican. They immediately reapportion their House of Representatives. They kick Democratic congressmen out, and they put in, and now those are safe red districts, Republican districts. And as a result of that, these guys have to worry more for their own longevity about somebody else who's going to come along and out-conservative them or out-Tea Party them.
You know, and listen to what you're saying, Alan. Yeah. This is not spontaneous or a recent development. This is a thought-out, patiently put-into-place plan that began with back in 2010 at least, if not before then. It's well-funded. It has a vision, I think, in the future. And the Democrats look just as weak because they're not countering it very well.
Well, see, I think the Democrats' risk is here is that they're enjoying it. Everybody is looking at the polls. The polls are showing the Republicans held responsible for the whole thing.
Not as by as much as I had thought they would be. It's like 57%.
But still, what's going to happen here is that there are polls that are being released now in some of the competitive races. Whether you can trust those polls or not, I don't know, because often they're being released by the opponents, the potential opponents. But somebody like Chris Gibson, who has played it very close to the middle and, you know, who votes for things like National Public Radio, you know, is shown, you know, or doesn't want to put another American boy or girl into a foreign land. He, because he potentially is going to have to vote for Boehner, is put at risk. And I think the same thing is true for so many of the others around there, but they're in a real bad spot. They can't vote him out because they're afraid they get Cantor or something worse.
Two quick things. One about what Rosemary just said about the years of planning that goes into something like this. But it reminds you of what Hillary Clinton said decades ago of a vast right-wing conspiracy and was laughed at. And she said, okay, well then look at the Potomac River and the construction of all of these think tanks and buildings that are on the river that have developed basically to get us.
That's right.
Well, yes, I remember watching the Today Show the morning she did it.
She said that.
And I said, yay, you know, because I thought she was right. I thought that they were trying to, it was all over the sex, you may remember.
Yeah.
And I thought that they were seizing on this to. But it's just so interesting that sometimes policy outdoes salaciousness. In other words, she was right. I think she was widely applauded for taking that stance, even though they tried to make fun of her.
Hillary also has some experiences trying to get through a health care plan, too. So she knows. So, again, it's the focus on we can't have health care in America. That seems to be, or maybe Obama, I don't know. It seems to me it's health care is the big enemy, and I don't understand why. I also had the feeling watching the shows on Sunday that we were seeing a plot in action. The talking points, even the words are the same.
Sure.
Ted Cruz with Candy Crowley, that was a very frightening interview.
Well, I thought she was frightened by it, too.
Yeah, I think so, too. She was kind
you know,
of appalled,
she was trying to bite her tongue.
Yeah.
Because Cruz was so, well, what's the right political science word? Wacko, you know, on this thing.
Well, she was frustrated because she couldn't
He just ignored her questions. It was the Sarah Palin technique. That's not the important question. Here's the important technique.
Right.
Let me push back, Candy, and saying the same thing.
It's like when she moderated the debate.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
It was the same thing. And so there you have Boehner on this week with George Stephanopoulos on ABC and saying the fact is this fight was going to come one way or the other, and we're in the fight, which shows what you're saying of the, I guess, the eroding of where the polls are closer than they were initially in the shutdown of the government.
Well, here's the deal. If you're somebody who knows nothing, and that's why I don't like this health care plan, and I think Rosemary's earlier point is right on the money. If, in fact, we had had Medicare for all, and, you know, which a lot of people say we couldn't afford, I don't know, but you can afford what you want to afford. And as you go down, if we had Medicare for all, everybody would have understood it because their mothers have it, their fathers have it, I have it. And it's easy to explain. But when it's bells and whistles and Rube right. Goldberg and all that, you can take somebody who know nothing. They can watch Fox News, and Fox News will say, terrible, the work of the devil, Lucifer. And they'll believe it because they don't know anything.
Right.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, again, as a journalist, I want to see both sides. And I think that the Republicans really are right in some points. That was a terrible bill, the way that was passed with no Republican votes, messy, huge, impossible to understand. That's not good legislation. And to say that it's settled law and the Republicans can't complain about it now, also ridiculous, because didn't the president himself withhold, he held off on the employer mandate for years, so he was messing around with unsettled bill. I think those are valid points. However, the Republicans now are so set on spin that all we're hearing is the Democrats won't negotiate. And look at what the look what the Democrats have given up, Alan.
Yeah.
We're at sequester level funding right now. That was never a Democratic choice. The president has said he will give in on the entitlement programs like Social Security. That was never a Democratic idea.
Well, but that was going to happen. That was going to happen
okay.
because we're spending more than
no
we have.
No gun laws,
yeah.
No immigration.
Yeah.
How did
well,
this
the
happen?
The immigration approach by the Republicans is just plain stupid. I mean, you know, they know that they lost the presidential election because of women and Hispanics and others, and they just can't get it together. They can't make it work for them. I think to some degree, some of this is, as you suggested just now, convenient to the Democrats.
Right.
They know they have to balance the budget.
Right.
And if they can make the other guys be the bad guys, here's the way I see it working out. In the end, Boehner will come. He'll need some cover. So he's going to say, I insist on some entitlement reform. They'll raise the Social Security age. They'll do some of that stuff and the Medicare stuff. And then what you will have is an outcome which satisfies the president and the others, but they can blame it all on the Republicans. I think that's going to happen.
We should note, and then we'll take a quick break and come back to this issue, but on the administration side yesterday, Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew appeared on four Sunday talk shows making
right.
the case to keep the pressure on the Republicans to raise the debt limit, and that's their talking point.
Right.
How do
and
they
the,
do
right,
that?
That's true.
How do they do four?
They do
he
all
stays
four.
In the same place and they come to him?
They can, or they're also, it's, you know, Washington being the incestuous little town that it is, you know, those studios are all very close.
Uh-huh.
And uh-huh. you do... You know, you can knock them all out.
He's chauffeured
one shot. Yeah.
So he does seem to be the rising spokes star for the Democrats.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
He does seem kind of sane and more approachable than Ted Cruz, I got to say.
Oh, you're so prejudiced.
I know. I try not to be, but he was scary. I find that frightening.
No, he was scary.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will wrap up this conversation, then take a news break, and then go to a host of other issues. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo, Ray Graff, and Alan Chartok here. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries of Clarkson University, offering a hybrid online and in-person Master of Science in Engineering Management for working professionals. BIRE.org/engineering for upcoming programs in the region. Homebrew Emporium in North Greenbush, West Boylston, South Weymouth, and Cambridge, offering beer, wine, and cheese-making equipment and supplies, tea, herbs, and more. And Healthy Living Market and Cafe, featuring the Divine Wine Store, with wines from all over the world with pairings, monthly tastings, and events. HealthyLivingMarket.com.
We have been talking about the Treasury Secretary making the rounds on the morning talk shows. The Commerce Secretary, Penny Pritzker, has certainly been out there as well, warning that business is starting to suffer from the federal shutdown. Her comments at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, APEC, comes as leaders gathering for the summit voiced worries about the U.S. situation. And on Friday, the U.S. defense contractor Lockheed Martin said it would put 3,000 workers on unpaid leave. The U.S. government closed non-essential operations on Tuesday after Congress failed to agree on a new budget. And President Obama canceled the scheduled trip to Asia because of the shutdown. So with Ms. Pritzker saying that the shutdown is not good for business, not good for the economy, does that make any difference? I mean, will that resonate with the American people as far as putting pressure on both sides to come up with something?
Let me ask you all this question. Do you sense a huge amount of pressure? Because I don't.
No, I don't. It's like Chicken Little. Right. They've been saying, oh, sequester would ruin our lives, and and the shutdown was horrible. And I don't believe any of it.
Well, it's
anymore.
Not the first shutdown. I mean, we've had shutdown after shutdown. Well, the last one was 96.
Yeah, but the consequences then seemed much greater than they are now. Now it seems like old stuff, you know. Gingrich got himself, was that Gingrich, right?
Yes.
Got himself into terrible trouble.
Well, lost the seat, right?
And lost everything during that thing because people were so outraged. Now you risk disbelief. You say, oh, well, you know, the Defense Department just called back all of its civilian employees and said, oh, we found the money to pay you. The Congress comes back, the Republicans start it because they know they're in such trouble, and they say, oh, by the way, all of you who've been laid off during this time, you're all going to get paid, you know, afterwards, which, by the way, is what the state legislature has been doing for years. We don't get paid if there's not a thing, but we'll get paid when it's all over. Who do you think you're fooling? So I think there's a sort of a sense of somehow we're getting by with this, and I think that helps the Republicans.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Sequester now looks like, okay, let's just keep it. We're dealing with it. We saved all that money.
But what's the long-term damage? I mean, isn't that what we're talking about? What a long-term economic damage? I mean, we're at a fragile state anyway.
Well, yes, that's true. But interestingly, if you take...
I mean, I know we don't normally care about that, the long-term damage.
but there's a lot of discussion. One of my favorite channels at 4 o'clock in the morning is CNBC.
Yeah.
You know, I watch it. And I watch these guys sitting around. And the market, by the way, went down a little bit, but it went up the other day. And I think there's a certain amount of disbelief on their part.
Right. I think
also.
They're saying, oh, yeah, this is more blowhards in Washington.
Right, right. So how much does it really hurt us? There are people who will come on and say, Chicken Little, the sky is falling in. And then there are people who say, eh.
Right.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go to some of your letters, and we will tackle other issues as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be back after this news break. Good morning. Welcome back to our WAMC Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff, Rosemary Arameo, and we welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Before we move on to other issues, we have two letters I want to get to quickly. Karen writes, why isn't anyone talking about how much money the shutdown is costing us, which I think we have been discussing.
We have, and it's very hard to get a hold on it. I mean, when they meet one day and then they say, Joe, everybody is going to get paid. Well, now that's a pretty big little chunk in all of this.
Also, Christopher makes this comment. In April, the interest paid on U.S. debt was 1.84%. The string of the GOP are pulling. The strings of the GOP are being pulled completely by the corporatocracy that took over in the 1970s. They want to wreck the credit of the U.S. so they can scream. Reread the Powell memo from 1971.
It's very conspiracy minded, and yet, do we believe it or not?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time
That
you know, a self interest was identified as being the moving force.
Exactly.
Very hard to say in all of this, because you have Democrats, you have Republicans, you have Republicrats, and they all take the same money.
Yeah,
think about that. They all take the same money.
Exactly.
So I think one of the things here is that you get a guy like Ted Cruz, who I consider to be, you know, really off the wall. But he breaks away from that Republican crowd, in my opinion, in the wrong direction. But he does. And so there is no question that K Street in Washington pulls a lot of strings, the banks and everybody else. Or as somebody said on Vox Pop the other day, the banksters.
The banksters. I love that.
I do like that.
I don't know. We were talking before about yelling, the sky is falling, so that people just get, they don't listen to danger calls. Is that the metaphor, the little boy who called?
Cried wolf.
Or Chicken Little.
But here we're about to end up in a dispute. It may spill over from the current impasse about defaulting on our loans. Now, that's a whole new deal. And I can see that worries about what this will do to the U.S. credit and credibility are being overlooked.
Well, right, you are, because the other day when Boehner said that he wasn't going to let that happen, the markets went up.
Right.
Over the weekend, he seemed to be taking back them words.
Yes.
And now it seems
just
that
we just hear
that the market is tanking big time this morning. So
that brings us to Republicans are backed by banksters and businessmen and corporations. So why isn't there pressure on them from that part of their constituency to fix this?
Well, I think it will be. I mean, I think the fact that it's going down that way is going to be very serious to a lot of Americans. You know, almost every American at this stage of the game, because, you know, we have these, 401ks and and the stuff that we all get instead of pensions.
Right.
And when the market drops,
nice deal that was.
then, for business. It may have been.
For business, yeah.
That's another whole show, but I would be glad to tell you why I chose from the very beginning at Rutgers, when I was my first teaching assignment, I chose TIA Cref because it was transportable.
Yeah.
And so that meant a great deal to me. But anyway, I digress. Yeah. No, I think when the powers that be see the bottom dropping out of the market, as apparently it will be today, if it goes down 200 or 300 points, that's going to be seen as a Black Monday. And then I think the Republicans, with this emphasis on, will
take
it crazy.
And more seems like a game of chicken, and you just described those exact. I'm not so sure you're on a digression, by the way, Alan, because taking care of pensions in a way that favored corporations, taking care of health care in a way that favors business, those are related issues. I think
that's really
at the heart of what we're seeing going on.
And when you see Detroit going into default itself.
Exactly.
That's a pretty good idea, and we know why it was. It was all over the pensions.
Right.
There.
Right.
So you start taking Americans' pensions away, that's pretty dangerous
and,
stuff.
And so the attack on unions this past couple of years has been interesting. The unions, who were really the only segment of workers who did not really move to 401ks, we were all seduced by the idea of like controlling our own destiny and going into that rich stock market. So we pull out of pensions. The unions did not, and they actually made the right call. And for that now, they're being painted as greedy and selfish. I don't know.
There was a fascinating article that Rosemary sent to all of us this weekend, and it is from Bill Moyers, Moyers & Company's website. It is an article by Joshua Holland, which is entitled "The Shutdown and He Said, She Said Reporting." And Rosemary alluded to it earlier in our conversation. There's a lot to this, and I don't want to take it completely out of context, but one of the things, just because it plays into what we've been talking about this morning, Mr. Holland writes, what makes the current ploy by the Republicans novel is they are offering essentially the entirety of Mitt Romney's agenda, in essence, a demand to do over the 2012 election, and while they're at it, 2008 as well. Yet you wouldn't fully appreciate the audacity of this tactic by reading standard Beltway coverage. As Brian Butler notes in Salon, Time magazine reporter Zeke Miller calls this negotiating technique is by no means novel. Hostage-taking by promising harm if you do not get your way has long been a standard way of doing business in Washington. James Fellows, decrying what he calls a failure of journalism, flagged the headline, "Parties Digging in Their Heels as Hourglass Empties." The Courier Post, a Gannett paper, similarly went with, "Lawmakers dig in their heels, government shutdown nearer," and Politico's Jake Sherman and described the ransom note as simply a set of demands for reform. All of this coverage reeks of false equivalency, implying yet again that both sides do it. And I certainly urge you to read the article. It's at BillMoyers.com. He has a thought exercise of what if the Democrats did this,
right.
And it's very well done. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Rosemary and I both teach journalists,
yes.
And so do you.
Yep.
And we know that the traditional journalistic education is to lead right into this. In other words, it is a tradition to make sure you are covering, quote, both sides. And not going out on a limb, which is considered to be bad journalism.
Right. Advocacy.
But I tried to do something else with my students at the Legislative Gazette, but at least explaining, and Rex, by the way, who's very interesting, he's a wonderful journalist,
Rex Smith at the Times Union.
But he says there's something to be said for people. I mean, it all comes down to this. What was the other side of the Holocaust? What? That there wasn't a Holocaust? We know there was a Holocaust, and we know how terrible it was. And yet, I have seen people go out and find the deniers,
right.
You know, and say, here's the other side of the story, that there was no Holocaust. Well, of course there was. This is so that if it's 10 versus 10%, I'm not relating this to the Holocaust idea, but if there's 10% right on one side and 90% right on one side, and each of them has to get equal space, that's a travesty.
Well, it makes you think of just how great Walter Cronkite was during the Vietnam War to say, okay, it's time, this is enough. We need to now make the stand.
And that was shocking when he did that.
Yes. But why was it shocking? It was shocking because all along he'd been doing the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then
here's
all of
their
sudden,
side, here's our side.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he comes out and says, this dramatic thing. He also said Mario Cuomo was going to be the next president of the United States. That didn't quite happen after his shining speech.
Okay, that's a tangent.
What'd you say?
That's a tangent.
Well, I just wanted to point out you can't be right all the time.
No. But in that point, he was a commentator and not a, yeah.
I think what's striking is that those journalists willing to say it, the Republicans are right or the Democrats are right, are much more interesting than the coverage that I'm reading in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post, where they're being very that false equivalency is the framework of their stories.
You know, I
it's
see it a little
more
bit,
striking.
I see it
well,
a little
interesting
bit,
or yeah. true? I'm sorry.
No, I find it just a little bit different than you do. I think that the Times is devilishly clever. And I think that when they do these he said, she said stories on both sides, the placement of the sources, the headlines, the way in which the story is featured quite frequently lead you to believe that
still,
the Republicans are wrong.
I agree with you on that, yeah. except that that's still reading between the lines. You require an awful lot of your readers as opposed to Jon Stewart, for example, who says, yeah. you know, here's my headline, shut down, they're holding us hostage. You know, that's his position is clear. And I do think interesting rather than reliable. But when you read a side that's all biased, when it clearly is biased, you're going to look up the other side, too.
You may know it. You know, when we were all in college, no, I'm sorry, when I was in college, which was, you looked outside, you saw the prehistoric creatures. We read a book called, by Vance Packard, called The Hidden Persuaders.
Right.
And, you know, you're getting persuaded when you read the Times by an intelligent way of looking at both sides, but one which I think definitely leads you in one direction, mm-hmm. which I happen to approve of.
Mm-hmm. I have to report back later this week. I've assigned a class of freshmen, just beginning, very, very, very beginning journalists, to write an editorial, which they've never done before, on the shutdown, and they have to blame somebody and give their reasons for it, and to also respectfully submit the other side's argument against it. So I don't know if they're able to do that. These are millennium kids, you know.
Well, it's easy for them to do it. They just have to take virtually any editorial in the United States and change it a little. I mean, the editorial pages are not
don't
being
tell them how to do that.
Plagiarism. That nice. will not be good.
Right.
Yes.
Great. Good advice.
Yeah, not like they wouldn't know how to do that. Anyway, however, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about other issues as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to the Roundtable panel on WAMC.
Support comes from Lotus Fine Art and Design Woodstock. Reverse painted glass lighting, artisan crafted jewelry, and gifts for all occasions, paintings, and custom framing. LotusWoodstock.com. SUNY Ulster Continuing Education Kingston, offering fall classes from advanced manufacturing to helicopter piloting. SUNYUlster.edu for online catalog. And eBiz Docs, providing document management systems, digital imaging services, and scanner sales for government and private businesses across New York State since 1999. eBizDocs.com.
We were just singing Kumbaya on the break, and it's good to be back. It's very nice.
Wow.
Take a little bit of a break. All right, welcome. Let's go to some other issues in the program that we want to talk about. One is let's bring Ray into this conversation.
I was going to say, what do you think, Ray?
Yeah. let's talk about
I
this
know
story
nothing.
Because this is.
What did you think of Walter Cronkite? Getting
the
up there.
That's
saying.
The way it is.
Yeah, that's the way it is for this Monday.
That's the way it is.
Okay, A-Rod suing the Major League Baseball. And this was a story that came out of last week. Alex Rodriguez sued Major League Baseball and Commissioner Bud Selig, accusing them of pursuing vigilante justice as part of a witch hunt designed to smear the character of the Yankees star and cost him tens of millions of dollars. The lawsuit was filed in New York State Supreme Court. It speaks unspecified compensatory and punitive damages for what it alleges was a relentless campaign by the league and Selig to destroy the reputation and career of Alex Rodriguez. Ray Graff.
Well, he's got a point, right? I mean, his sentence, if you will, is so much greater than everybody else's. However, you know, him calling it a witch hunt is quite hilarious given his history and all of this. And, you know, apparently...
That's a classic definition of chutzpah, right?
Yeah, he's got it all right.
He's a spoiled little brat, and he's probably practicing to run for the U.S. House of Representatives.
Possibly. But, I mean, you know, he's doing what he has to do to protect his tens of millions of dollars.
Again, and he's run for Congress.
He's angling for his deal, and, you know,
The truth is obviously somewhere in the middle.
I don't like any of the characters in this story.
I think Selig is
wrong. I think he is trying to prove, oh, now I really care, when it hasn't up to now. And A-Rod, isn't he like the highest paid athlete in the world?
In baseball.
Okay, yeah. So almost the world. And he knew the rules. He broke them, and now he's being penalized.
Okay, but how would you like to be Bud Selig during the discovery phase of the trial, when you are called and you have to answer questions under penalty of perjury, and they say, who did you talk to about this? Did you ever say we should do this? I think that there's going to be a settlement here. I do. I don't think...
You're absolutely right.
Yes. Thank you, Ray.
Please proceed. No, you're absolutely right. You know, I think that there's more to this than just his connection to biogenesis. There have been some sort of covering of tracks and things like that have made it worse for Major League Baseball, and they say you've done much worse than failing a drug test. I get that, but you're right. They're going to make a deal. They have to.
And then he continues to play, though. That's the other thing that just didn't.
Well, not next year.
Not well.
Not next year. not well. Not next year. And was he going to play at all? Anyway, you know, that was all questions.
Well, how old is he now? 38.
Yeah,
a mere child.
So if he misses next year and into the following year, forget it.
How old was Franklin Roosevelt when he died?
I think he was 63.
We had this discussion.
How many home runs did he hit that year?
Too soon.
Too soon? Really?
When you think about, curious about this, of course, is the timing. It's right after the season. It's just as you go into playoff baseball. And a time where Bud Selig has said, you know, at the end of next year, I'm out. Yeah. I'm done.
Yeah, it's not an easy. He doesn't have an easy job, but I've never liked him. Him, I don't like.
You know, you press people will find the other side, the other story, much more interesting, and that's Albert Pujols, who is a great ball player. He's injured now, and he has not failed any drug tests. He is suing this guy. He used to play for the Cardinals. He was a first baseman, and I think he played for the Giants as well. Jack Clark. And he had a radio show. And he said, pretty much, that Pujols, he didn't say he thinks he used steroids. He said Pujols used steroids. And Pujols is suing this guy. And Jack Clark says, I welcome this. So this is, I think, a much bigger deal because Pujols has been untainted. Here's a guy who is a great baseball player. And if he goes down, that's just another card in the house of cards that is baseball.
Yeah.
And because he had been up until this point unscathed.
Yeah.
So do you think Jack Clark is doing it just because he actually has something or because nobody could be that good?
He got fired over it. So you don't say that unless you're prepared to get fired and unless you have evidence. So I assume he knows something or he has someone who will say something because that's a big deal.
Well, but just let's all remember that it is almost impossible to sue any public figure. And I say almost impossible. Theoretically, you can do it. But somebody who has advanced themselves into the public eye quite often does not get compensated. For example, what did William Westmoreland, when he won his lawsuit, get a buck? A dollar.
He didn't actually win it, though. That was a settlement because he would have lost if it went to jury. Westmoreland was not really a winner.
You never know.
you never know.
All of his underlings saying the general lied sort of hurt him in trial.
One of the other things that we want to talk about is the situation in Libya. Libya's interim government condemned the United States on Sunday for what it called the kidnapping of a Libyan citizen from the capital city a day earlier. This is over the weekend, and Libyan lawmakers threatened to remove the prime minister if the government was involved. The capture of the Libyan who was indicted on a charge of planning al-Qaeda's 1998 bombing of two American embassies in East Africa was so fast and left so few clues behind that Libyans were only slowly coming to grips with what had occurred The government denied an American assertion that it had played a role in the operation amid anger that the nation's sovereignty had been violated.
How much was the reward in that case? $500 million?
I believe that was the total, something like that.
So that's what we call incentive.
That's a good chunk of change.
I mean, let's face it, the government has a problem. We don't want to put boots on the ground. You don't want to, if you're the president of the United States, you don't want to look like you're a namby-pamby. And so, you know, some of these ways of taking these guys out are exactly that. We've tried it before. I'm not making a rational excuse for it. I'm just simply saying it beats putting a lot of kids on the ground.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Very ambivalent about this. If you took it as a pure case that we went in and snatched a citizen off of an alleged ally's
soil, or if they snatched
soil,
one of ours,
or if they did it in reverse, just think about that. That'd be World War III. And we did this with Osama bin Laden. It was roundly applauded. Is Obama doing this now because he needs another "I'm strong and defending you" kind of hero case in the middle of his shutdown woes?
I don't think he needs that now. He's not running again.
I think he did this because he thought it was right, but I don't think it's a good thing that we're just invading other countries and snatching up people.
Ray, let me just take issue with you, if I may, for a moment here, and that is that people who are serving out their last term, a la Bloomberg right now and others, are very concerned about how history is going to treat them and what their record is going to look like. So it isn't only if you face another election.
I don't really believe that, although I've heard the criticism. It's also interesting that in Libya itself, people are very divided. They don't like that America came in and pulled a superpower move on them. However, they're also not so happy to have these incredible, horrible terrorists in their midst. They're not sorry to see him be taken. So it's a very ambivalent situation.
When, meanwhile, the accused operative for al-Qaeda is seized by United States commandos in Libya over the weekend is being interrogated while in military custody on a Navy ship in the Mediterranean Sea. Officials say this morning he is expected to eventually be sent to New York for criminal prosecution. So we'll see what happens from there. Finally, our last story for this morning is, lo and behold, we have a new $100 bill.
Yay! Good, because soon enough it's going to cost that to buy a pack of,
cigarettes.
Pack of cigarettes, a loaf of bread, a six-pack of beer. We might as well get used to seeing the new 100s.
I think a lot of it has to do with, and we all know what it has to do with, it has to do with counterfeiting.
Yes.
And it's the most counterfeited bill in the world, apparently. And at least that's what I heard on the unimpeachable National Public Radio.
A bill beloved by drug dealers and other gangsters.
And you can look at it, you can hold it different ways, you're going to get different nuances, different light on the thing.
Yeah, it's got ink spelling out of
the inkwell. Well, I think, we have to remember that money isn't green in this country anymore. We used to say green, but it's not green anymore. We've just completely changed the color of it.
But somebody will find a way to do it,
The new color of money. I think you're right, and it is fascinating. It has this three-dimensional blue stripe with images that appear to move when the note is tilted. There is this image of the inkwell that Rosemary mentioned where there's a bell and the color changes, which just to me seems cool.
Yeah.
It's like a work of art.
Yeah. It's very
neat. You won't want
to part with it. $100 bill costs to manufacture.
Yeah, like $78. It's not too bad. It's still a deal.
Wow.
$78.
And I look forward to seeing one, although I'm not really confident that I will.
Yeah.
We're just in Canada. Their money is plastic now.
Good.
Yeah, many countries of the world
have
plastic. I'm a little bit worried about an upcoming trip I have where, the foreigners will only take the newest bills and that you can't get the new 100s.
You're traveling with hundreds, are you? Well, good for you.
You have to.
Why don't you take traveler's checks?
It's
no one uses traveler's checks.
Come on.
Shows how
often I get out of the house.
Yeah, really.
I don't even know that they issue
bring
them
some
anymore.
Doubloons with you.
No.
The $100 bills will be released tomorrow and start circulating tomorrow. So stand in line, Ray, and be ready.
Yep.
Well, I've never had a $100 bill in my wallet. Never.
Well, no, because you can never cash them anywhere. They're no good,
everybody,
really.
Everybody thinks they're counterfeit.
Right. Once you give them to anybody, they just give you the keys and tell you to lock up. It's not like it's a... we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.